Hello. It seems only yesterday that here we were talking about phone hacking and the news of the world. Well, what a difference a day makes. The end of the world, or at least the news of the world, is nigh. After 167 years, the paper is to close on Sunday. How did we get here? Well, the issues are spiralling well beyond the news of the world. The Prime Minister has just talked about the deeper truth, the less noble reason being the political class courting support, not confronting the problem. And he said that unlike Rupert Murdoch and his son James, had Rebecca Brooks offered her resignation to him, he would have taken it. So what will life without the news of the world be like? Will we miss it? What does this mean for journalism in Britain? Will it be enough to stop the rot in terms of News International's reputation? Will it be good for the business? A masterstroke? Or as one very senior Whopping insider put it to me just this morning, not so much a master plan as a disaster plan. More Fred Karno's circus than carefully thought through corporate strategy. These are all questions for our media show special today. And as always, let's hope with as much light as heat. So to get us started, will we miss it? Here is what the owners said about it on the occasion of the first ever edition of the News of the World on the 1st of October, 1843.
The general utility of all classes is the idea with which this paper originated. To give to the poorer classes of society a paper that would suit their means, and to the middle as well as the rich, a journal from which its immense circulation should command their attention. These have been the influencing motives that have caused the appearance of the News of the World.
Oh, yes. Well, Peter Preston is a former Guardian editor and now columnist, and Bill Hegarty, one-time editor of the Sunday People, is editor of the British Journalism Review. But first, a word from the front, so to speak. Carol Malone is a columnist on the News of the World and joins us from home where she's writing her very last column, possibly ever. Carol, many thanks for joining us. What is the mood amongst your colleagues at the moment?
Well, you can imagine 200 people lost their jobs last night in the most shocking day that many of us have ever experienced. I think we all knew it was bad. We all were seeing stuff emerge day after day, and thinking, can this get any worse? And then, of course, it did get worse at 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. But I think all of us, me included, are still in shock. I cannot believe it's the end of this institution, as you pointed out, this 167-year-old institution.
Do you think we'll miss it?
Oh, God, yes, I think we'll miss it.
The fake shake and all that, we think we'll miss all that, really?
I think, I can't remember a time. I'm an old girl now, but I can't remember a time, from being the age of 12, 13. I read the News of the World, and I think that's the case for a lot of people. It's been in our lives and on our doormats for decades. It's travelled through the decades. It's interesting that you said that when you introduced the News of the World at first edition, you said it was for the poorer classes. The News of the World has always been for the working man and woman, but we still had the highest AB readership of any newspaper in the country, which meant rich and poor read it.
Do you not think that the whole phone hacking scandal, to put it no firmer, might not have sort of tarnished the brand irretrievably?
Clearly it tarnished the brand. It sullied what we'd all worked for. But, the killer for all of us in all of this is that, for the last 5 years and under the leadership of Colin Myler, our paper has been as clean as it's possible to be. We are the most PC state compliant newspaper of them all. I don't see how the News of the World could have changed more than it has these past 5 years. And that's what's sad for all of us. We go to enormous lengths to make sure we get it right. We are constrained probably in a way that a lot of other newspapers weren't. And that's what's sad for all of us now, the people there are paying for the sins of the people of the past.
I was going to say, I talked to a colleague, a senior colleague of yours over there yesterday, who has to remain anonymous, and they said to me, quote, "The only person inside this building who thinks she should still be in that chair is Rebecca Brooks, and the only person outside is Rupert Murdoch." Do you think Rebecca Brooks should have resigned?
I'm not going there, because that, at the moment, I don't care. But what I care about is the people I have worked with, the people who today are reeling and wondering about how they're going to pay their mortgages. This has happened at a time when papers are in danger anyway, and a lot of these people will never work again, and that's a problem for all of us. This has tarnished all newspapers. It's not going to end here either, and ending the News of the World, getting rid of it, is not going to stop what's happening now.
Okay, Carol, many thanks indeed. Bill Hegarty, we heard high-minded sentiments from the original founders of the News of the World. Is that really the News of the World of recent times?
Well, probably not of recent times. One you missed, incidentally, was their slogan when it was launched. Our motto is the truth, our practice is the fearless advocacy of the truth. I think that that was something they probably did retain for many, many years. It's in the last few years that not only the News of the World, but I think the red-top tabloids in particular and other newspapers have lost their way.
Peter Preston, a rag or a force for good, do you think, in general?
Probably not a force for good, but in particular cases, many stones turned over which have needed turning over, so there is a loss too.
I mean, what about the quality of the News of the World's journalism? Because it was often sort of said, it's easy to sort of, you know, put a sort of clothing on your nose and look down your nose at it, oh dear. But actually, most of the time they got things right, didn't they?
Most of the time they got things right, and when you talk to News of the World reporters in the past, they're often very, very professional, very hard-nosed, but very professional people. So there isn't a sort of division in Fleet Street where suddenly there's the gents and the others. There are people who are professionals, and a lot of professional people work for the News of the World.
Bill, do you think, will we miss it, do you think?
Yes, I think it will be missed. Of course, we don't know what will replace it, but obviously it won't be the News of the World. It won't have the same flavour. I do think it's unfortunate. I hope that that Carol's wrong in that a lot of them will never work again, but I guess that very few of them are going to be employed. I guess one quote one could say now in terms of what's happened is that it's the poor that have got the blame, and the rich are still getting the gravy.
What do you think, Bill, about the reputation of the paper? I mean, I can always remember it as a paper. I remember my grandparents reading it, and I remember when I was, people I know would read it, and they'd always regard it. I mean, it was always a bit of a joke. It was, you know, the bonking vicars and stuff, but it was a sort of paper for them. You felt like it was on your side.
Absolutely, and it was always scandalous, but scandalous to the society of the time. It ran court cases that were somewhat salacious at great length, and it was selling over 8 million copies. So
do you think its reputation was irretrievably damaged by phone hacking?
I think irretrievably damaged, and perhaps not just its reputation, but we're in a great danger of popular journalism itself being irretrievably damaged.
Peter, what about the impact on journalism as a whole of this? I mean, is this a watershed moment, do you think?
Well, you often say watershed moment, and 25 seconds later you're wishing the drought would end. Clearly, in terms of David Cameron today and the end of the PCC and all sorts of things milling around, and inquiries until the year dot, there's a huge sort of water pile coming over the dam. In terms of how I hope people look at it, I get very twitchy when people say, and the press must do this, and the press must do that. Quite frankly, without blowing the Guardian's trumpet, we only know about this because of the Guardian. Mm. Quite frankly, without blowing the Telegraph's trumpet, we only know about MPs and expenses because of the Telegraph. So let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Do you think that they had any... did they have to shut the News of the World? Or do you think the situation might have been retrievable by them? As some people have said, for example, if the key managers had resigned and if the company had handled it differently, they wouldn't have actually shut the News of the World.
Oh, I think if they'd come clean much quickly and much more frankly, that it would have been much better. Did the News of the World have to go? No, the News of the World, as Carol was saying, seems to me to have been a bit risk-taking, but pretty clean by previous standards the last 5 years. This is a management failure and a PR failure. So, it's not a News of the World Now failure.
Now, you're a close observer of these things, Peter. What does this tell us about Rupert Murdoch and or James Murdoch?
It tells me that the management structures within News Corp and within Whopping have looked a bit wonky for a long time, look wonky now. I can't think of a PR experience which has been more uselessly managed. Well, it's just terrible.
Whose decision do you think this was? Is this James or is this Rupert?
Well, we know from the Times, which is inside the walls, this morning what happened. There's a long conference call going on endlessly. James is saying, you've got to stop this, Dad. Rupert is saying, no, I don't want to. And at the end of with sadness, and at the end of many long hours of corporate discussion, Rupert keels over. But it's James, of course. It's the culture there, and it's the, let's move on to the digital world. This is a terrible mess. This is getting in the way of everything. Let's throw the paper out of the window.
Bill, what do you make of David Cameron's comments about the relationship between politicians and the press having gone having become, well, he didn't say to use these words, but in effect he means kind of sick. You know, in other words, in the course of seeking backing and favourable coverage and so on, you know, turning a blind eye to things that were sort of obviously problems.
Well, it's just a bit difficult to explain, isn't it, for a man who's a very good friend of Rebecca Brooks, a very good friend of Andy Coulson, so much so that he employed him, rightly or wrongly, but a lot of people think now very wrongly, and I think has courted the press just as much as anybody else, certainly as much as the previous governments, that I, in my experience.
OK, Bill, Peter, many thanks, but do stay with us. And if you've thoughts about anything you hear on the programme, you're, of course, very welcome to email us, themediashow@bbc.co.uk. So what about News International's business? Will they miss the News of the World? It does, after all, still sell 2.6 million copies, and unlike many newspapers, actually makes a profit. And what, if anything, might this move mean for the big deal waiting in the wings, actually the biggest deal of Rupert Murdoch's entire career, the multi-billion dollar purchase by News Corporation of the 61% of Sky it doesn't already own? Claire Enders is the founder and chief executive of independent media analysis firm Enders and follows these things very closely. Claire, many thanks for joining us. Just first of all, in the short term, what is the P&L, the profit and loss effect on News International and the other papers of losing the News of the World?
Well, I mean, it's not a huge effect. I mean, obviously, in top-line terms, the News of the World turned over around £160 million last year, which is about 15% of News International's UK revenue, and it contributed about £10-15 million of profit. So it's a very small thing in relation to News Corp as a whole. It's more material in relation to News International, but it's not that significant. Obviously, it buys paper, it distributes, it has a lot of back-office functions and so on, so it's absolutely part of the whole profitability picture of News International.
Now, I happen to know that this is true, by the way, but inside News International, there have been two projects running, one called Project X, which was about cutting 50% of the commercial staff. Mm. I'm not sure if people at News International, the staff know that, but it's true. And also Project Y, which is the much-fabled seven-day working. Mm. Now, this was on the kind of production side, so still keep separate brands. Now, they've been working on this for quite a while, I think. Does this, in some respects, could this be construed as a smart business move?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they're killing off a toxic brand that's being deserted by advertisers and could be boycotted by consumers. I mean, they're doing absolutely the right thing in trying to stifle this brand. But in other terms, it's a very sensible idea to have a seamless brand, 7 day a week operation, and so on. And for that to be, as it were, also a digital operation makes absolute sense. And we know that that has been on the cards for some considerable time.
And so, you expect that to happen?
I expect that it is very unlikely that News International would leave the space in the market occupied by 2.6 million copies a week. I think that that would be very strange indeed.
You say it's a toxic brand. Do you think that the News of the World as such, that the News of the World became a toxic brand, or is it really the sense of the way the management were handling it? Is it the paper or is it the people?
I think that by Wednesday, the News of the World had become a toxic brand in advertising and consumer terms. The closure decision is absolutely the right one, I feel very much for the journalists, and I've heard, you know, what they've said.
Okay, now, you've watched the Murdoch empire closely over time. Now, when you say this could be construed as a smart business move, I know I put the words in your mouth slightly, it's a smart business move. You can imagine this making some business sense. Is this a business move that Rupert Murdoch would ever have taken?
I think that's unlikely. I think this is a business move that James Murdoch has taken, and clearly the background provided gives more explanation of that. But it is something in which this is not the solution to the current scale and scope of the problems that News Corp are encountering in the UK, nor is it a solution in any way to some of the issues.
I was going to ask you about that, briefly if we can. In terms of the bigger picture, the News Corp Sky deal, right, is it having any impact? I mean, we know that, for example, that the number of representations to the government in answer to their current consultation, which finishes today, on the News Corp Sky deal, which was regarded last week as a mere formality. There's now 100,000 plus of them, and the government issued a statement today, DCMS, saying that they expect this to take a good number of months. Mm. So it's plainly already delayed it. Is there any chance it could in fact derail it?
I don't think so. I don't think there's any real connection between the two issues. But ultimately, what happens next is very much in News Corp's hands. If they take the heat of the Prime Minister and accept the resignation of Rebecca Brooks and begin to move on politically.
Do you think that'll have to happen?
I have to say, after the Prime Minister has indicated that in this way, I think it's really inconceivable that the company shouldn't be paying attention to the fact that they have inflicted upon David Cameron, upon politics, upon the public, and so on, all of these actions and alleged actions that might have taken place were not undertaken by other people. So they have to take some kind of responsibility. Someone has to take responsibility.
Just one of those sort of rather slightly technical question. With the News of the World closing, that will reduce, by definition, Rupert, the News Corporation, the whole, their share of UK media.
That's absolutely right.
Now, theoretically, that you would have thought the bid is easier to wade through.
That's true. The fact is that the News of the World, although very significant in UK terms, is a material part of the calculation. But so plurality has in fact improved with the closure of News of the World, at least temporarily, until we'll see what the successor product is.
Okay. Thank you very much, Diane. Hey, do stay with us. So what about News International and, for that matter, News Corporation's reputation? Will closing the News of the World do enough, or even anything, to salvage that reputation that's been left in tatters, not just by the scandal of phone hacking itself, but at least as seriously by the perception of the way the company has been seen to handle, some might say mishandle, matters? Andrew Gaz is a man who knows about corporate relations disasters, a veteran of Lehman Brothers and BP. He's also a former editor of the Financial Times, and he's here. Andrew, many thanks for coming. How would you, from a professional point of view, characterise News International's handling of this whole thing?
I would say somewhere between calamitous and catastrophic. It's one of the ironies of the whole affair that one of the world's major media companies has made such a complete foul-up of handling communications around this crisis. And I'm talking about going back over 6 years, from the initial long phase of denial that this was anything other than one rogue reporter, through to the supposed inquiry that yielded no results beyond that, to the assumption of power in the company by James Murdoch, and no substantive change resulting from that. So there have been ample opportunities to find out what was going on, and to then, on the basis of those findings, make a clean breast of it. They have all been comprehensively left to one side, and it only really became a serious piece of communications yesterday with James Murdoch making the comments he did.
So how does a company, and this may apply to other clients of yours, I've just heard about, how does a company get this sort of thing so wrong? What is it about companies that leads them into this kind of problem?
Well, I think if you're in denial about a problem, or if you have a particular form of corporate governance that depends too much on, as it were, the writ of one person or one family, you get yourself into these problems.
And is that what you think happened here?
Absolutely. I think this is not a failure of the News of the World now. It's not a failure of News International as a company producing other newspapers. It's a failure of corporate governance in News Corp. And it reminds me of a sort of tottering Middle Eastern dictatorship where, you know, loyalty to the chief is more important than corporate governance or ethical behaviour.
But except that it's hard to imagine the chief, as you describe him, Rupert, I suppose we'll call him that, in this case, condoning any of this sort of stuff personally. There's been a sort of tangible sense that he's been, if anything, rather distant from it.
Yes, but I mean, if you are the patriarch of an important top-down company, the first thing you have to do is get involved and find out what's going on. It's been a case of the chief looking another way and not getting to grips with it. It's been the problem.
So there's a problem with the management underneath him.
Absolutely, and compounded by the fact that, as we've seen in recent days, there is this sort of almost blind loyalty the other way towards somebody who everybody else thinks should have resigned.
I was going to say, Rebecca Brooks, let's name her here. Are they going to be able to re-establish any form of confidence, if you like, in the public realm while she stays in that job? I mean, I should say, look, there's no reason to dispute her assertion that she knew what was going on. There's no evidence that she did. But nevertheless, she aggressively defended the company and defended the lines that you've put about, you know, belittling, attacking The Guardian for revealing it, insulting politicians almost, or being dismissive of them anyway, you know, when they try to ask questions about it. Where does she stand now?
I think in any normal company with a board that was doing its job of seeing to the reputation of the company, its overall share value, and its relationship with other stakeholders, she would have been gone quite some time ago.
Now, James Murdoch said yesterday various things, but he made a couple of comments. He said, the company paid out-of-court settlements approved by me, that's James. I know now that I did not have a complete picture when I did so. This was wrong and a matter of serious personal regret. That's paying out millions of pounds to close down legal actions. Where does that comment leave him, do you think, in the corporate world?
Well, I think in terms of PR, it's probably one of the first smart moves that the company has made. I believe it's the first time anyone has heard a senior Murdoch admit to a mistake, which is a start. I think in overall reputational terms, a lot of damage has already been done. And, you know, this is merely a part of a much wider picture now, which probably leads to, I slightly differ with Claire about the prospects for the B-Sky B deal. I do think it, as time goes by and this won't die down, it becomes much harder to waive the thing.
Okay, but to cut a long story short, you think Rebecca Brooks will go?
Yes.
Will James Murdoch remain in charge?
I think so, but you know the waves of this are lapping very close to his door, as we saw in Parliament earlier this week.
Thank you very much. Well, last but certainly not least, the man who could probably claim credit for having started quite a lot of this, when he sued the News of the World on Gordon Taylor's behalf. He then popped up again this Monday to tell the world about the hacking of murdered teenager Millie Dowler's voice mailbox. Solicitor Mark Lewis, he's here. Mark, how much more is there to come, do you think? I mean, you've seen a lot of this stuff.
I don't want to misuse the watershed moment, but I think it's a watershed moment for the whole press. Glenn Mulcair, who was the inquiry agent, made the mistake of writing things down, and that gave the impetus, the evidence, to show what had been done by the News of the World. I mean, it's been completely handled terribly. There's jokes going around saying that Murdoch has got rid of the wrong red top, and he did. He should have got rid of Rebecca Brooks, and he should have kept the News of the World. Probably it should have happened some time ago.
But we've had lots of stuff based around the celebrity cases, some of which you've been involved with, the civil actions, and now we have. Then this week, as we said, we got Millie Dowler, then the Soham girls' relatives, 7-7, and then the relatives of a serviceman who died in Afghanistan. How much more is there to come, do you think?
Well, I've always been saying that this isn't about the celebrities and the sports people. There are thousands of ordinary victims. And it's actually the press reporting this as being something to do with the celebrities and sports people, which has perpetuated that myth. The press, the News of the World, and other newspapers have been breaking the law. There was a report, What Price Privacy, by the Information Commissioner in 2006, which set out lots and lots of details of breaches of the law, not just phone hacking. If it was only about phone hacking, that would be a good start. But
in terms of Mulcair's notes, I think there's 11 or 12,000 pages of them. It looks as if what the police have now been doing is sort of picking up information from elsewhere, like Motorman, the Information Commission report, where I think the fact that the Dowlers had been looked at by one investigator, they've taken that information and cross-referenced it and dived into Mulcair's notes and found confirmation of what they thought. So have we yet seen the results of a full and thorough review of everything in Mulcair's notes?
I think the current police operation is trying to get there. There are 45 officers. They're still going. I mean, we have to look at the original operation where Andy Hayman, the assistant commissioner at the time, was saying that not a stone had been left unturned. This was a police officer who couldn't find a quarry.
Now, okay, you've obviously, you're more familiar than most people with all of this. Do you think eventually this is going to lead to the direct connection of more senior executives with actual knowledge and forethought about what went on?
It's inevitable that once there is a proper investigation into what went on, it is going to go to very senior people, because they might not have been involved in the actual hacking, but the idea with the number of people who were victims and the number of stories that were effectively corroborated before they were run. If you ask the question as to how somebody could sign a cheque for a lot of money, for example, James Murdoch accepts it, he was wrong. But he must have asked at the time, what am I signing this check for? He was running a very, very large company. The idea that he would just sign a check without knowing is far-fetched.
Thank you very much, Mark Lewis. Well, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks as ever to my guests, Carol Malone, Peter Preston, Bill Hegarty, Claire Enders, Andrew Gaz and Mark Lewis. As ever, do feel free to email us, themediashow@bbc.co.uk, or visit our website where you can listen again to the programme and even download a podcast. So thanks again for listening. Do join us again in our usual place, 1:30 next Wednesday. Goodness knows what'll have happened by then. Up next, you and yours. Goodbye.
The Media Show was presented by Steve Hewlett and the producer was Simon Tillotson.